Bad Apples, episode 3 of season 3. I'm your friendly host, Klaatu. This podcast is a member of the Tech Podcast Network, found at techpodcast.com. We're also a member of hackermedia.org, a great site for all your technical, hackery, Linuxy, geeky podcasts. In this show, in this episode, we're going to talk about Diablo, the newest release of MaMo Linux. We're going to talk about GUIs in Linux, and we'll discuss how to change your computer, the default language set and keyboard layout for your Linux computer. Stay tuned. You are not going to miss this. Okay, so here's a controversial topic for you. I got an email from a guy named Otto, and he was talking about the Linux user environment. And this was a fairly long email, so I'm not going to read the whole thing. I'm just going to give my thoughts on it, and some of mine intersect with his, and some of mine will answer some of his questions. So it kind of all works out. He was talking about the user environment of Linux, and basically he was posing the question of whether or not Linux needs or wants a bigger, better user interface. Meaning, we have the X window system, and it's a fine system. It brings us a graphic user interface on the Linux platform, and it works. But, you know, a lot of people complain about, I guess, the way it looks or does not look, the way it performs, things like that. And I have not really given, I've not had a system robust enough to really, really put strain on a Linux system the way that I have strained other systems in the past. I do a lot of video editing, a lot of compositing, a lot of rendering, things like that. And as soon as I get a proper workstation built and with Linux installed on it and running, you know, really hefty applications like Blender and maybe Lives, you know, in player EDL support, things like that, then I'll have a lot more to say about X Windows Server system, you know, as such. But what Otto was talking about specifically was, for instance, Mac OS X versus the X Window system, and why can't the X Window system have what OS X, you know, Leopard has? And a lot of people are going to argue that, in fact, it does. And, I mean, if you've seen screenshots of, for instance, Fab from the Linux Outlaws, you know, the screenshots that he takes of his computer, of his setup, are just incredible looking. I mean, he's got games on there, he's got little reflective dock-like entity down at the bottom. You know, his desktops look really nice. And they're even running GNOME, amazingly. I don't know how he got GNOME to look that good, but whatever. I'm kidding, of course, all you GNOME lovers. I like GNOME. So, you know, and Compiz Fusion obviously brings a lot of bling to the Linux desktop, and that's cool. But, you know, you also run into problems with where you're playing a video, and you move the player window over, and the window moves and the video doesn't move with it until you've dropped it, then the video catches up, things like that. And I know that this all depends on, for instance, graphic card and graphic card support. And believe me, I of all people know how difficult it is for two different companies, like a computer manufacturer and a graphic card manufacturer. They just don't seem to want to work together. Everyone's safeguarding their proprietary code to such a level that they won't even talk to each other about the code. You know, they don't even want to tell each other about it enough so that, you know, a major computer manufacturer can get everything working as it should work. The fact that Linux is able to achieve a working system at all, without any support from most major component manufacturers, it blows my mind. If you knew half of the things that computer manufacturers go through to achieve the polished look that they do achieve, you know, the fact that when they turn on the computer, they get a video signal that actually reports the correct resolution and everything like that. I mean, the fact that they're able to do it with help from these very closed source vendors, they have a hard time doing it. And Linux, without any help, is able to do it. It really, really is quite astonishing. If I haven't thanked the kernel developers and the distribution people lately, believe me, thank you. But back on track here. macOS 10, for instance, has a certain look, and they have a certain amount of consistency and the ability to do, you know, to have the effects very integrated with the rest of the environment, et cetera, et cetera. Yes, part of it is because they know exactly the hardware that they need to code for. There is no question about that kind of advantage. But another part of it is the fact that they have got essentially what is a, if you can imagine a box or a container, and place this box on top of all that Linux or all that all the code, all the Unix code in, for instance, macOS 10, the two would not talk to each other very, very much. You would have the box would be a self-contained slab of code that is not just the Unix foundation. Specifically, it would be the Cocoa framework, I guess is what it would be, or the collection of frameworks. And Cocoa it can be many different things, but it would be like Objective-C. It would be proprietary frameworks that they've developed. And, you know, in spite of having the free software at their foundation that they always lay claim to, they've got the very closed-off and private proprietary code that they are making for themselves, because apparently they're not confident enough in their proprietary code that they believe people would still purchase, you know, their computer if someone else were to use elements out of their code. So yeah, they keep that stuff private, proprietary to themselves. And they also cordon it off away from the Unix environment. And that is why, for instance, I know that, for instance, on Linux Outlaws, Fab, quite a few episodes now, was talking about, like, Adobe. And why don't they port Photoshop as is, just port it from, for instance, macOS 10 to Linux? Shouldn't be that hard, right? Because Mac is based on BSD, and Linux is based on, you know, Unix. They're both Unix, or not based on, but it's a Unix-like system. So why not, you know? Well, the why would be that Photoshop isn't running on the Unix components. It's running within this Cocoa environment with on top of Objective-C or whatever environment they've got. It's not talking, and that's why you can't go to, for instance, a terminal and automate Photoshop in the same way that you would be able to do automation of, you know, the GIMP or Inkscape or something like that that is talking straight to the Unix stuff. You can't do it the same way. It's very separate. It's very roped off in a way. And so there are advantages and disadvantages, obviously, of doing it that way. And it's a little bit akin to like having a virtual machine, you know. So if you could, for instance, take a Java virtual machine, make it the full size of your screen so that all you see is this Java virtual machine, and then develop your OS inside of that. You know, your whole graphic user interface would be inside of that. And in order to access, for instance, GIMP or Inkscape or the terminal, you would have to create an emulator or a wrapping within that Java environment to bring the Unix stuff into that environment. And that's what Mac does. They have an X11 implementation that they wrap a Quartz window manager frame around so that you can actually see stuff that is talking straight to the Unix layer within that environment. And I'm sure I'm not giving the exact technical details here, but this is as basically as much as I understand it, which is a bit more than I did, you know, for instance, 2 years ago. So, but that's the idea. And in fact, there is something similar to that for Linux called Project Looking Glass, which is by Sun Microsystems, and they did do just that. They made a Java, you know, there's the Java runtime environment. You make that full screen, and you develop your user interface inside of that. And Project Looking Glass, if you've never seen it, you should YouTube it or Google Video it or whatever, because there's a demo online of Project Looking Glass, and it is basically OS X Leopard before OS X Leopard. It's the same thing. It's kind of surprising, in fact. It's got the same shelf at the bottom. It's got a lot of the same conventions, like the rotating 3D space kind of idea, stuff like that. And that will run on Linux, because it is based on Java, and Java runs on Linux, and so you could try it. And they had it for download for a while. It's actually a fairly old project. It doesn't seem to be terribly active at this point, not that I can tell. I haven't really, like, gone and investigated. I haven't joined their mailing list or emailed anyone about this, but just a cursory, Google search for Project Looking Glass doesn't bring up, like, you know, the latest release or anything like that. So I don't know what's going on with that project. Maybe Leopard was the realization of Project Looking Glass, for all I know. The question is, now, does Linux want it? It's hard for me to imagine any Linux user that I know wanting anything like this. The desire for the fancy eye candy, I guess the really sort of the integrated effect, it just doesn't seem that strong within the Linux community. Most Linux users I know are concerned about performance of computing rather than, you know, how much strain they can put on their graphics card. And whether or not, you know, I mean, so I know some systems run Compass Fusion without a real problem. It's more of like a, it's totally fine. Obviously, the people doing Compass Fusion and X will continue to work on it to make sure that on systems that you do find anomalies where you're moving video around and you're losing color in the video, or the video isn't keeping up with the actual frame, the player playing the video, things like that, that stuff is going to get ironed out. Now, I could almost sort of see, like, maybe not even in an alternate reality. I mean, you could see a very, very consumer-oriented distro, you know, like Linspire or Zandros. Well, now they're the same thing, but, you know, something like that, going for a model like this, if they really thought about it and wanted to do it and invest. I mean, obviously, they would have to revive Project Looking Glass or continue to work on it, whatever the case may be. It would be something that I could see happening. And I think that they could, I mean, it could be interesting, seeing what I've seen of Project Looking Glass and just kind of imagining a completely self-contained environment on top of a Unix layer. I mean, it's obviously not unheard of. It's being done. And it could be interesting, but it's not for me, and I don't think it's for the general Linux user or the general Linux community. And, it seems like it's a lot more limiting than it is anything else. So it really does seem fairly superficial. But you never know. I mean, maybe there's advantages to that that I'm not really thinking about. You know, certainly within the Java community, I know there's a lot of Java programmers out there. I could imagine them coming up with some interesting programs. It could happen, but I don't think there's a big need for it, and I certainly don't think there's a big outcry for it within the majority of the people using Linux right now. Diablo. Diablo is a very popular video game, apparently, as I've learned from people, and it has nothing to do with what I'm about to talk about. No, in fact, the Diablo I am talking about is, of course, the second OS update for MaMo Linux. MaMo Linux being the version of Linux, of Debian, that was developed specifically for the N800, N770, and N810 portable computer series. And it's a really great little distribution. I like it a lot. I mean, it's Linux. It's cool. The first one that I got, you know, preloaded with my Nokia was the 2007 version, which honestly I didn't love. I mean, I didn't not like it. It didn't jump out at me. It just felt very functional to me. And then when the first 2008 revision came out, called Chinook, I was really impressed. That one really looked nice, and it had some cool little desktop, I guess you'd call them widgets or applets. I think they call them applets, actually. Yes, they do. You know, so that was really, really neat. Now, somewhere along the line, I had to send my Nokia, which I'd gotten I'd gotten off of someone else. So, and that someone else had chosen or had set like a password or something, and could not reach the person to find out what the password was, et cetera, et cetera. So I sent it in to Nokia to have them physically, manually, like, reset, you know, whatever they needed to reset. That was apparently the only way to get that done. So that was kind of a bummer. But I sent it in, and I guess somewhere along the way they had to reinstall the OS, which I'd expected, so it wasn't a problem. I mean, obviously I would not send a device in expecting it to come back in the exact same, you know, especially when they're going to be flashing chips or something. So I wasn't too worried about that. But they reinstalled the system. Now, how they reinstalled it, I don't know. But ever since then, you know, there were some problems with my unit. Not showstoppers by any means, just weird little things that would happen every now and again, here and there, that it would bug me, but never enough to really investigate it or to sit down and reflash the whole thing the way that I wanted to do it. So the point of all this is that recently the one application that I use probably most of all on my Nokia, which is Memo Recorder, which is the very application into which I'm speaking to you now, or by which I'm speaking to you now, it was not working. It would record me for, you know, 30 minutes, and then I would go to save it, and it just wouldn't save. And then I would go to play it, and it wouldn't even play. It was really, really frustrating. It was kind of, it was a problem. So when Diablo came out, which I guess a couple of weeks ago now, this isn't breaking news as usual from the Bad Apples. You never hear anything about breaking news. But Diablo came out, and I thought it might be a perfect opportunity to flash the Nokia, which I obviously needed to do anyway. And so I gave it a shot. Now, here's part A. That was part A, I guess. This is part B of this whole discussion. And this is the unfortunate rant section. The Nokia, and I have two devices that I bought or that I acquired with Linux preloaded. The Nokia N800 and the Triple E PC. Both of them came with Linux. Very exciting, you know, very neat to get something preloaded with Linux. You know, that was cool. It's neat to see Linux being supported, whatever. Okay, so Nokia, whatever, I don't really know what their perceived audience is for their handheld series, the whole series. It was greatly disappointing to me that their site didn't seem to have any mention of the new release, and no mention of where to find Diablo, the image, no mention of where you find the flash utility, the Flasher 3.0, as they call it. No mention of how to do it. Just absolutely no mention of anything. And I was really, really upset by that because, you know, I mean, any company updates something as significant as their operating system, you're going to hear about it, and you're going to find information about it online. And, of course, a Google search rendered a whole lot of different stuff, but a lot of it was from, like, these weird, you know, geek types, oh, wait a minute, that's me. No, but you know, these developers and stuff who are talking about flashing the Nokia, you know, with the latest build of MAMO, and it's an unofficial thing because it's not done yet, and here's how you get it out of SVN, and all this other good stuff. And I mean, while that's very nice, I didn't want to know how to flash an 810 image onto my 800. I wanted to know how to flash an 800 image of Diablo onto my 800. It was released, you know? I wanted the notes. I wanted the release notes. Finally found the flasher util, and I finally found the image itself, the Diablo image for the 800, and to my shock and amazement, there was no documentation with either of those either. There were README files, there were licenses, there are all kinds of things, but nothing about here's what you do, here's a step-by-step instruction on what you need to do, what button you need to hold down while you're you know, turning on the Nokia, etc., etc. I was pretty surprised, and I don't think it would have bothered me as much if it weren't for the fact that I find that triple EPC is practically the same kind of deal. You know, here is Asus shipping Linux with their computers. They've sold a ridiculous amount of computers that are preloaded with Linux, and whether or not Linux is like the reason it sold, or it's just a great computer and so it would have sold no matter what, who cares? The point is that Linux is part of the package, that OS. I mean, we don't even have to call it Linux if you don't want to. You know, Zandros is part of that package. Now, give the person purchasing the product, you know, support on how everything is done with that OS. You know, where your repositories are, how to you know, add different software. I mean, obviously, I'm not even gonna, I mean, I for the triple E, I didn't really need any support, but I found that their documentation was a little bit disappointing, and even their user manual, you know, there's a whole section on how to install Windows XP on your triple E PC. You know, I mean, you're shipping with one thing, and yet your manual cover, you know, for a third of the manual, you're talking about how to install something entirely different, which I know the marketplace says that, yes, that is a fair, that's a fair thing to put in a user manual, right? I mean, that it can be done. But you know what? I mean, Mac doesn't give you instructions on how to install Windows. You know, they give you, they've finally figured out how to set up a disk utility program so that you can actually partition your drive without erasing the whole thing. That was kind of nice. But it's not like they're telling you, like, okay, now here's how you do XP or Vista on this machine. That part is up to you. But they'll tell you whatever you need to know about Mac OS X and where to find updates and where to find, you know, help and support and all that other good stuff. So I just think that these Linux vendors need to do a little bit more of proactive support. So give some answers to the people who deserve, you know, the information. Now, having said that, it wasn't really that big of a deal for me. It didn't really cause me a whole lot of problems. I mean, it was frustrating with the Nokia because I couldn't find everything in the usual places, you know. But then I remembered that the internet basically is now turning into a one big wiki. So yes, it is at mamo.org/community/how-to_flash-latest-Nokia-image-with-Linux. That is the site that you need to go to if you have a Nokia in XXX series, and it will tell you everything you need to know about updating. So again, that's mamo.org/community/wiki/how-to, that's all in caps, H-O-W-T-O, and then the underscore, and then flash latest Nokia image with Linux. And that's all in camel casing. So it's capital F, capital L, capital N, I, W, and L. So each word is capital, but it's all one long string. Flash latest Nokia image with Linux. And I'll include that link in the show notes. Now, the Nokia, the actual flashing process, ridiculously easy, as I think a lot of times flashing chips is a lot easier than people realize. You download the Flasher utility, and then you download the image. And that's kind of standard practice when you're flashing the chips. You need the actual utility that's going to do the flashing, and then you need the image that you are going to flash onto said chip. It says on the wiki to make sure that your battery is fully charged. I'm not positive why. I don't know if that's because they don't want your battery to run out while you're flashing, which would make sense to put that in there, or if it's like literally the flasher needs to know where the battery is, you know, in order to calibrate it correctly. I really don't know. I went ahead and did it. But I would never flash with only battery power. I would be plugged into the wall for sure. So here's what you do. You unplug the charger, and you switch off your Nokia. You connect the Nokia to the computer via the USB cable, and then you execute as root, or if you're using you know, like Ubuntu or something, it would be sudo or sudo, whatever. So I just did su, and then I put in my password, and then you type in, basically it's one command. It's well, you know what you need to do? I'm sorry, I remembered this, and they didn't actually say this on the wiki, but I kind of did it out of just best practices. You need to chmod space plus x flasher dash 3.0. You want your flasher utility and your image, the little image, the Diablo image, to be in the same directory, of course. And you want to, like I say, chmod plus x that flasher utility. So it's chmod space plus x space flasher dash 3.0. And that makes it executable. That's easy, right? Now, you, in fact, you could even do chmod a plus x. Why not? Yeah, do that. Chmod space a plus x space flasher dash 3.0. Once that's finished, I mean, it takes no time at all. Then you're going to do dot slash flasher dash 3.0 space dash capital F space capital R capital X, and then just hit the tab, and that'll autocomplete the whole name of the image, because the image has an absurdly long name. And then space dash lowercase f space dash capital R. It immediately attempts to begin flashing, and it says, oh, wait a minute, I can't find the USB device. That is correct, because your N800 is off. So now you're going to plug in the Nokia to the charger, and the Nokia will come to as much life as it needs to come to in order to be flashed properly. There's another way of doing it without having the charger. I just do not recommend that. I would never flash something. If given the choice, I will definitely go by AC power while flashing something rather than doing it, you know, on battery power. That just seems a little bit risky to me. Battery, in that case, would be a backup. You know, I mean, if your power goes out while you're flashing, then at least, well, hopefully your computer has a battery, but at least your Nokia won't go off, you know. You shouldn't just rely on the battery while flashing. And you'll see some messages while the image is flashed over to the unit. And it takes a little while, like maybe 60 seconds, maybe a minute and a half. And then it'll be done, and the Nokia will reboot itself automatically. And you'll be taken to a setup screen, you know, as if though you'd never turned on your little device. And it'll be like you have a completely new Nokia. It's really, really nifty. It's a really nice little, it's very similar to, you know, it's the same interface as the previous versions. It's not, you know, I probably shouldn't say a completely new device. I mean, it's just cool. It's not revolutionary. But it is a really nice-looking operating environment that they've got on there. And one of the neatest things is that that's the last time you'll have to flash. They're going to just do software updates the normal way now, which is nice. Now, you'll probably want to add repos, repositories, to your package manager. And the way that you do that is just in the add and remove applications application, which is in the main menu. And the only reason I'm mentioning this is because after I did this, I was kind of surprised to find that the extras repository, the official Nokia extras repository, was disabled by default. Not really sure why. So if that's the case, you'll go to add applications and you'll find like nothing available. And just go into the menu of the package manager and select to look at the repositories, the sources, and you'll see the default one right there, the free or the extras repository, and it's disabled. So just enable that. It'll refresh the list, and then you'll have a lot more available to you. Now, another good site to find repositories is Gronmayer, Gronmayer, .com, sorry. So it's Gronmayer, Gronmayer.com/IT. And what this is a pretty up-to-date little page of all the repositories for various Nokias. A lot of these are not for Diablo, so you're going to want to kind of be careful about which ones you add. But if you go to the site on your Nokia, on the browser in the Nokia, there's a little check mark by each repository. You can just click the check mark and then say, okay, add all the ones that I've checked to my repository list, and it will do that automatically for you, so it's kind of nice. And there's a couple on there that I added. I mean, there aren't really that many for Diablo yet, but I did add a couple. And I was pleased to find that everything that I need, you know, to make my Nokia great for me was there. So I was happy about that. I'm sure there's obviously a lot of different people are using a lot of different applications. And as time goes by, more software will be added. So I wouldn't worry too much about that. I mean, if you do use an application all the time, you might want to, for instance, go to gronmayer.com/IT and see if the application that you're looking for is listed in one of the Diablo repositories. And if it isn't, you may want to hold off a little while just to make sure that you're not, going to do anything that'll make your Nokia useless to you for a little while. And obviously it's recommended that you back up all your stuff before you flash and stuff like that. Even though you're not flashing the memory cards themselves, you know, you just want to kind of make sure that you're backing everything up. I have everything of mine on my external card or the expansion card, so I didn't really back up anything. But you should if you need to. And the other thing is that when you're flashing, you know, just do it wisely and smartly. I mean, it's not a big deal to flash, but really it is. I mean, you know, you don't want to do it when your, you know, 2-year-old kid is like running around pulling cables out of things or something. You know, just make sure that if you're flashing and it gets disconnected or the power dies or whatever, that could be potentially a really bad thing. In theory, it could, as they say now, I guess, brick your Nokia. So don't do that. But otherwise, it's pretty easy to do this kind of thing. It's done all the time. So have fun and enjoy Diablo. I'll bet you were waiting for this moment the entire time, huh? I was. It's time for a cup of coffee, so go get yourself one. I'll make myself one. Be right back.
What are you doing?
Trying out some free and open source software. Why?
Oh, that looks cool. But I don't have a Linux box.
That's not a problem. A lot of open source software is available for Macs and Windows machines.
Yeah? Whoa, cool. I'll start downloading right away. Let's see. Torrent site. Oh, serial numbers to crack.
No. That's commercial and proprietary software you're illegally downloading. I'm talking about legal, free, and open source software.
Oh, but I know what I'm doing. See, oh wait. Replace this file with the crack file and then...
Attention! You with illegal software on your machine! Shut it down and come out with your hands up!
Oops. That's for you.
He's right here on the third floor! It's open!
When do you want me to visit? Mondays or Fridays? Man, you should have listened to SourceTrunk.
SourceTrunk.com, your weekly trunkload of open source.
One thing that constantly amazes me about Linux are the myriad options for localization available to it. You would kind of think that something, you know, again, as, you know, always done by volunteers and everything like that, you'd kind of think that that wouldn't have so much localization. But really, I, at least with the OS, the other OS that I have any experience with, Linux has far more localization options than that, for sure, without question. And this is handy if you're going to be configuring a computer to give out to someone else who speaks another language, which some of us may have done. I've done it. I didn't know this, how to localize a computer at that time, so I didn't get to do that part. But, you know, it helps if you know how to do this, because you can configure the thing in English, and then you can switch over the localization at the last minute and hand it over to the person who's actually going to be using the computer so that they get to use it in their own language. Now, if you're bilingual, obviously this would help, or if you just don't speak English very much, this would be good. So this is something that is very handy. For me, I've been learning Esperanto for a while now, and Esperanto is it's a manufactured language, something that was invented about 100 years ago. It's kind of an international language without a cultural bias, basically. So I've been learning that. And I realized that I really ought to be using, Esperanto on my computer, because I'm looking at my computer all the time. So the way to do that, now interestingly, I'm not doing this on Fedora or Slackware. I'm actually doing this on Debian. Why? Because I've got a PowerBook G4 that I recently installed Debian onto. And I'm not going to really give notes on the installation process of that, because it went pretty much as normal. There was nothing really special about it. Downloaded the PowerPC version of Debian, popped it in, installed it. It was a typical Debian install. It's a very simple but robust install menus. And next thing I knew, I was running Debian, so that was pretty simple. Of course, the wireless didn't work out of the box, but I just went and got FWCutter, and got the firmware that I needed, and it worked. Now, if you're doing this and you need hints on how to do the FWCutter thing, just listen to Season 2, Episode 2. That's where I go into great detail about getting the Broadcom wireless cards working on the old Mac laptops. One thing I don't have on this is sound right now, and I know someone emailed me about that at one point. So I'm going to review some emails and see if I can sort out the sound issue eventually. I think it's just a matter of literally the sound module not being loaded by default or something like that. If I recall, it's a pretty simple thing. So if that works, I'll talk about it later. But to configure the localization, it's pretty simple. You become root, so SU, and put in your password. And then you go, you type in dpkg-reconfigure/locales. That is dpkg-reconfigure/locales, and that is L-O-C-A-L-E-S, locales. That brings up an incurses menu of all the different languages you have available to you. And like I say, it is really, really extensive. It not only goes over languages, but it goes over regions in which those languages are spoken. So you know, for example, you don't have just Spanish. You have Mexican Spanish. You have Spanish Spanish. You have Argentinian Spanish. And so on. So For me, I've got English, and then for Esperanto, it's EO. And then you have to choose, for both, for any language that you're going to be doing, you have to choose what character set you're going to be using, whether it's UTF-8 or whether it's ISO 8859. I don't know what determines this. I know that I'm using UTF-8, so I'm assuming that if you're going from an English keyboard or an American keyboard, then that's the character set that you would want to use. And yeah, you select the ones that you want. You can have a number of them. You don't have to just have one or the other. You can have both. So I have English and Esperanto. And then you hit Tab and you hit Accept. And it asks what which environment you want to use by default. And I have Esperanto selected. And that's that. I believe you have to log out. If I remember, you have to log out and log back in for it to take effect. Okay, so now for the keyboard, because obviously if you're going to be writing in a foreign alphabet, you're going to want to have access to their unique characters. So to do that, you go to System, Preferences, go down to Keyboard. And within this window, there is a tab called Layouts. Now, this is handy to do even if you're not doing what I'm doing, because here it's going to show you what the computer thinks or what the OS thinks the keyboard is, and mine turned out to be incorrect. It was it had read the keyboard as like a, you know, generic PC-104, whereas really it was an Apple laptop. So I made that change, and that's been helping me a lot. But then down in the layout section, now I have two options. I have Esperanto and I have USA English. And so you can choose which one is the default, and you click Finish. And now you've got access to the unique keyboard. And that's about all there is to it, really. You're now using a different language, and hopefully you know what you're doing. If you ever need to change it, you just go back up to System, Preferences, and you can change the keyboard layout or choose what language you're using on the screen as well with the dpkg-reconfigure space locale. So give it a shot if you need it or you think you might want to play around with it. That's how you do it. The Qt framework, Qt, as some people call it, it's by Trolltech, to me has always been very, very interesting because it is just, it is multi-platform, and I think that's a huge strength. I just don't get why anyone would really want to be not multi-platform. I don't get that mindset or that psychology, I guess. So Qt has a huge appeal for me. It's simply the GUI. It's a GUI framework for C++ programming. And, I mean, maybe it works with more than that. I really don't know. But since I'm taking classes in C++, that's what I'm familiar with right now. And C++ and GUI programming is something that, you know, there's certainly a very nice book about by... it's out by Prentice Hall, second edition. I'm not seeing the author's name on here. Jasmine Blanchette and Mark Summerfield. That is who this book is by. But I'm not going to be talking about the book. I'm just saying that that's where a lot of my knowledge from the Qt framework comes from, aside from the KDE release event, where they talked, obviously, about Qt quite a bit. So I'm a big fan of the Qt framework. I've heard different rumors about Qt making it into GNOME and just interesting things like that. I wish I had a reference for that. I don't remember where I read that. I think it's a far-off rumor, probably just something someone mentioned at Quadec or something. But there was an interesting, a really cool blog post by a guy named Ivan. I'm going to totally mispronounce this last name. I think it would be Tsukic, or maybe Tsukic. It's C-U-K-I-C, Ivan, that. and he's a developer, and he's by his own words, a Libre software evangelist. Got a picture on his blog, and I swear I saw this guy at Scale over at the Debian booth. I could be wrong, but it looks exactly like the same guy. So this might be the same guy. That's neither here nor there. So on his blog, what he's been doing he's been doing some interesting things with Plasma. So that's the GUI version of KDE 4 that they've implemented for the desktop and things like that. So he got his hands on a mini ITX Asus motherboard based on the AMD Geode. It's a pretty small little board, and what he was going to do, or what he has actually done, is load Debian GNU Linux on the motherboard embedded with KDE 4.1, the beta version of that, which is in Debian's experimental repos. And he has, he just had, like, just the motherboard out, not even in a case, no hard drives hooked up to it or anything like that, hooked it right up to a monitor. It looks from the picture that it probably has, like, just got an onboard graphics chip. And he hooked it up, and he got it all working really well, from what he says. It's got, all the little KWin animation. It's literally a Linux desktop right on, just on the motherboard embedded. It's a really cool blog post. You should really check it out. And I will obviously certainly include the address of the blog post in the show notes. It's definitely worth looking at. It's really interesting, and I think it was Pat when he was on. This is common knowledge, I guess, but he was really kind of interested in it. Pat from the Linux Link Tech Show, when he was on here, the episode from the last season where I was interviewing him, he was talking a lot about the embedded, Linux growth and how that was a really, really developing thing. And indeed it is. It's just every time I look into chipsets and controlling, boards that are controlling other things like RAID cards and things like that, the more you see, and obviously routers, the more you see that underneath it all or within it all is a little bit of Linux. So it's really cool. So I will definitely check. I will put this blog post in the link in the show notes. But if you're at a computer right now and you can type fast, it's Evan, AVAN dot Foment Group, FOMENT Group, GROUP .org /blog/2008/07/17/plasma-embedd. He left off the D, so it's EMBEDDE. So plasma-EMBEDDE. And again, I'll have that link. But it's a really cool project. Check it out. It's really, really interesting. Well, that's about it for this edition of the Bad Apples. I'd like to thank Jay Lindsay from the Linux Cranks IRC channel for giving me the exact Debian command for the reconfiguring of the locales. That was a huge help for both myself and for a computer that I've been setting up for someone who does not, in fact, speak this language. So it was a huge help. Thanks a lot. And let's see what else. Oh yeah, the website, thebadapples.info. That is thebadapples.info. You can find our RSS and AUG feeds there. You can find the occasional blog post sort of thing. Sometimes I like to make an extra entry or two there. Not something regular enough probably for you to check back every day or week. But we don't do the wallpapers anymore, so that's not really there. Not a whole lot on the website these days. There's some links there. You can check it out. If you need to contact me, you can find me at gort.klaatu@gmail.com. That is gort.klaatu@gmail.com. And the music, as always, was done by Fat Chance Lester. Stay tuned for more Bad Apple fun next week. Bye. Thanks for downloading.
It's a prank caller.